Welcome back, all you Bills, Phils, nannies, and does out there, to the Mount Goatmore Cliff Dive Podcast, where week in and week out, we get together and we talk about greatness. We discuss what it means to be the greatest of all time, and at the end, we decide on the four goats, the four faces that would be on our Goatmore for every single topic that the internet can throw at us. This week, it's just me and Cam getting back together, but we have a really fun episode for you guys today. Cam, how you doing this week, bro?
Doing all right, bro. We both drinking the brewskis as always. You got the Vien Staffener. I got the, and hopefully I didn't say that wrong, but if I did, oh well. And I have the Two Hearted IPA. So that's good. But if these two brews went up against each other, you know, there's always got to be a winner. There's got to be a loser. One shall stand, one shall fall.
You certainly win. You win the battle of the brews this week. Two Hearted, my favorite IPA of all time. A little unfair. It's sort of the signature beer of my family. But yeah, I gotta love Two Hearted, best IPA of all time.
When I first was getting into beer and being a nerd about it, and I would go on Beer Advocate, I think Vien Staffener was like the top rated beer. I could be wrong, but I think it was like the top rated beer in the world at that point.
I do love me a Hef. Everybody knows that I love me a Hefeweizen, which is what this is. I always call it the banana bread beer. It tastes like banana bread to me. But I mean, Two Hearted has a pretty good track record itself. I think it's the most award-winning American beer for like beer critics and stuff like that, craft beers in America. I could be wrong. I think we did a beer episode.
We did. Let's be wrong, because I think it's Vien Staffener. Let's just be wrong as much as we want. It's our podcast.
Yeah. But shout out to the Germans for making good beer, and shout out to the Upers up in Michigan making a good beer.
Cheers.
Chin
O-H.
Chin.
H.
Prost. I meant to say Prost, because that's what they say in Germany, and I said Chin Chin, and that's what they say in Italy. I've just been around an Italian person for way longer than a German this year.
She seems pretty nice, too.
She is. She's great. She's graduating this week.
That's but crazy.
Back on track, Cam, what are we talking about today?
We are talking about the greatest arch enemies of all time. I didn't think this was one that needed to be divided into different groups. So just everything. Greatest arch enemies in the history of everything, everywhere, all at once.
Wow. I didn't go that big. I tried to keep it to movie/TV/comic books. But Julius Caesar, Brute, goat above?
No. At two.
Obviously goat above Jesus and oh geez.
Satan?
Maybe, no,
Pontius Pilate?
No, the
Judas Iscariot?
Judas. I'm sorry, everybody. Too many Hefs. I'm too many Hefs deep.
Ain't you, man?
Judas. Okay, anyway, let's have it. But you know, every good TV show, every good comic book, every good movie has a good hero, villain, arch nemesis battle. I'm pretty excited for this one. This one was a fun one to do. My list ended up being pretty chalk, but I went through a lot of options and I liked the variety, but comic books kind of wear me out with arch nemesis and the sort of dark mirror aspect. Every single Flash has a reverse Flash.
So, yeah.
Yeah. But it's a pretty fun one to do.
Yeah. I enjoyed this. I found many lists for this one. The one I chose was from the top 10s. One of our friends, greatest arch enemies of all time. At 10, the Flash and the reverse Flash. And this is Barry Allen. Number 9, Lelouch, Lamperouge, and Emperor Charles from, what is that anime called? What's Lelouch? shoot, it's a good anime. Code Geass. Code Geass. Hmm. And number 8, Superman and Lex Luthor.
Superman, Lex Luthor, 8. Yeah, I mean, to get it out of the way quick, I'm not a huge fan of just the Dark Mirror version of the hero being the villain. So Flash, Anti-Flash, Flash, Reverse Flash, Flash, Yellow Flash, whatever opposite of Flash that you want to use was not going to make my list.
I will say this. I love Superman and Lex Luthor. That might be my favorite just because when Lex Luthor is written really well, he's very compelling.
Mm. And when Superman's written really well, he's still not compelling.
Moving on. Number 7, we have Spider-Man and Norman Osborn. Number 6, we have Samus Aran and Ridley. Number 5, we have Harry Potter and Lord Voldemort.
I mean, all good ones, really, really good ones. In the past, I would have hated on Harry Potter, Lord Voldemort, but I've started to dig into some of the philosophy of Harry Potter, and it's quite fascinating. It's pretty good, and some of this Lord Voldemort stuff, is pretty interesting. So I actually like that one. The problem with Spider-Man is he has so many good villains, and I do agree with the idea that Norman Osborn is his arch nemesis, but like there's some pretty good Doc Ock arch nemesis stuff, and it's hard for me to want to take away from, you know, Batman has a lot of good villains. We're obviously going to end up getting to the Joker at some point. Joker separates himself. But the Doc Ock part of it, especially after the Spider-Man video game, even the playing field to me between him and the Green Goblin, it just did.
Spoilers. Spoilers.
Mm.
Moving on, this is the weirdest one for me. I get why they put it on here, but at 4, this is really weird. Number 4, Obi-Wan Kenobi and Darth Maul. Number 3, Sherlock Holmes and James Moriarty. Number 2, Guts and Griffith.
It's, yeah, I mean, I agree. That is, so it has to be based on Clone War and the TV shows or comic book canon that I'm not familiar with, because Maul does not have enough screen time in the movies to necessitate this. It also, just to say that, is really taken away from Darth Vader Obi-Wan. To me, that final showdown, and even the best part of the prequels to me, was the conflict and fight between Obi-Wan and Anakin makes for a perfect arch nemesis stuff. In the Incredibles.
I will say this. Obi-Wan and Darth Vader, to me, can't be on this list because the Obi-Wan show was so tremendously bad that it took away all the drama, or it just made it worse. I can't believe they made that show. It was a tremendous error. It makes The Last Jedi look like The Last Temptation of Christ.
My canon for Star Wars, I haven't watched a lot of that stuff. I definitely didn't watch the Obi-Wan show, so my canon for Star Wars is probably at this point very much not correct. It's very cultivated. So I'm not even sure of what you're referencing here. But I was just thinking of the culmination of the movies up to the point where Darth Vader kills Obi-Wan.
No, yeah, Darth, spoilers, Darth Maul comes back. Sorry, It's a good story in the movies. That show just, I want, when you mentioned that, I was like, oh my God, I hate that show so much. But Darth Maul and Obi-Wan fight a lot in the Clone Wars, and it's, they tell a pretty good story. Darth Maul gets his legs taken, Obi-Wan gets his love interest taken, and eventually, at the end, Darth Maul gets his life finally taken by Obi-Wan. So, it's fun. And that's not even in the Clone Wars. That's in Rebels, I think. So it goes.
Yeah, I just when I say Clone Wars, I just mean all of the shows, you know.
Yeah. All right. So moving on, number one. Do you have a guess?
Gotta be Batman and Joker.
Batman and the Joker is number one.
Yeah, I mean, I have one that, so it would be like Goat of All, but I actually have a bunch that I think are as important as that one. But yeah, I mean, it, I think every list that you would ever see about Arch Nemesis would have them number one.
We could do Goat Above if you wanted.
I actually don't want to do Goat Above because I actually think there's one that is just as important. It's just modern culture has sort of twisted it.
So I would say it might be the Goat Above by acclamation. Like, it is the most acclaimed arch nemesis relationship in media that I can think of. I don't love it. And since we're already there, you know, I guess it's on my list.
It's on my list.
I don't love it. I didn't really want to put it. But I also don't want to let my personal feelings get in the way of, like, what's obvious. This is what comic book hero-villain relationships are modeled after. This is the most successful hero-villain relationship in comic book movies, probably, in comic books, in cartoons, potentially. It's supposed to be simple. You know, order versus chaos. I don't think it is. I think the postmodern diagnosis of Bruce Wayne does not make him into a bringer of real order as much as someone who helps stagnate the process of chaos. I do like the idea of them both being chaos and having, you know, different means towards that, but I understand that Batman is still order at the same time. I think that some of the most compelling cases in this list, and this is why this ultimately makes it, are ones that do transcend one medium. So this is more than just the comic book story of Batman versus the Joker. It's the movies, multiple movies. It's cartoons with wonderful, unbelievable, game-changing performances by Mark Hamill, and I'm going to get screwed for not Kevin Conroy.
Yeah.
It's Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill. This is, you know, Lego, the Lego Batman movies. This is the Batman video games. It's a arch enemy. I don't want to say rivalry, but this is a relationship that is in every medium that we tell stories. So I think it, especially just because of the acclamation and because of the influences it has had on the medium, I'm not mad. Like, it doesn't scratch my personal itch, but I'm okay with that when it's by far the most acclaimed of these, the one that was in every single list.
See, I actually love the Batman Joker dynamic. I always have. I've always liked this Old Testament feel of it. Like you said, order versus chaos. I've always liked, and maybe this is my bias, I hate Dark Mirror villains. I just hate it. I hate when they share the same name. Batman and Joker are both individual concepts. I don't actually think it's a Dark Mirror. I know that there's been some stuff that's been like trying to philosophize it as a Dark Mirror.
I don't think so. I don't think it's a Dark Mirror. I do think that Batman is tough to write. I think he's tougher to write than people have historically given him credit for.
I totally agree. I've seen like Dark Mirror explanations about Batman and Joker. I think that that's sort of,
I think the problem is trying to melt them down. Like the Joker melted down into chaos makes perfect sense. Melting down Batman into order does not. It's too complicated. That's the problem that I think.
Yeah, and I mean, to me, it's a better version of good versus evil, where evil for evil's sake seems boring unless you sculpt a villain that is pure chaos like Joker. And it creates a dynamic of the Joker can really pull off anything. Comics-wise, I typically always love Joker storylines, even up to like the Batman Who Smiles. That can only be pulled off with all of the work beforehand building this Batman versus Joker narrative. The Joker certainly like pushing Batman to his limits. I always liked that. And I literally can't get away from the fact that to me, the greatest superhero movie of all time is The Dark Knight. I'm not saying that everybody should have that opinion, but to me, that is the most perfect depiction of Batman Joker. Heath Ledger's Joker is honestly probably my favorite villain of all time in any media. And it's such a perfect depiction of the struggles that these two go through. But Mark Hamill style Jokers are always great. And I've always sort of loved this idea of the Joker's need for Batman. And this sort of idea that they sprinkle it in every now and then where the Joker's like, I could never kill you. Like, life would not be fun without you. And him destroying the world and torturing all these people, but to like get a rise out of Batman is a very like selfish, evil means, but it's very Joker-esque. I do think that the Joker is way, way overplayed. I mean, Jared Leto's Joker is like three steps too far to me. Like then they redeem it by coming out with another Joker played by a better actor, Joaquin Phoenix. But it's just like, I do get tired of Joker narratives. But to me, there's a reason why it happens. It's just, it's such a good arch nemesis story. I think it's like, it's perfect in a way that I do love, but man, we have also gotten some really bad iterations of it.
So I will say, like, I didn't want to put this because I wanted to do Magneto and Charles Xavier, which I've left off. I prefer this to me, Charles Xavier versus Magneto is more easy to kind of look at and see the parallels in our own world. I do think that the Malcolm X, Martin Luther King comparison that is often brought up is even more simple and imperfect and flawed than the Order versus Chaos Joker and Batman one. But I still think that their non-violence versus, you know, mutant supremacy battle for their own reasons is really compelling.
Totally agree.
But I don't have them. I chose Batman and the Joker.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to make an argument against it. Like, I think that this is one of those, and maybe it is, I have an argument why I don't think it should be goat above historically, but it is goat above.
Speaking of historically, you kind of mentioned it. I have Julius Caesar versus Pompey the Great.
Nice.
So these guys, I think, are really, really fascinating. And I think what makes this so compelling, them so compelling as archenemies, is that the idea of Pompey winning changes the modern world in unbelievable ways. The idea of Rome staying a republic and not becoming the Roman Empire is like one of the biggest what ifs that we can think of. Like that's one of the undeniable great man of history points in time. Of course, there were lots of different, like Rome didn't become an empire purely because of Julius Caesar's charisma. A lot of it is political, economical, and more often than not for those times, based on climate. Maybe until now, and we're getting back to that with climate change, climate is maybe the most underrated part of huge societal changes. That's why the French Revolution, maybe more than anything, that's why the kings were beheaded, is because the climate messed up and people didn't eat. And when people don't have bread, they riot, and riots can turn into whatever they do. But Pompey versus Caesar, we get 4 straight years of the two great generals of their time going at it. And the stakes are democracy. The stakes is literally, you know, democracy for the biggest power in the Western world at the time. And Pompey is not the, I would say, most historians would say he's not quite as brilliant as Caesar, but he has the backing of the Senate. And he is the Senate's man. He's literally married. He had married Julius Caesar's daughter. So, like, they were in the triumvirate. They were true partners for political reasons. But coming apart as Julius Caesar crosses the Rubicon, truly tries to seek power, this fight for 4 years is the fight of, you know, I was looking for, I wanted to do like a general or two heads of state. Napoleon is the person that comes closest in my mind that I could find, but I think that this is a little stronger, and I think it's a little more definitive for time in general, especially going so far back. They fought in Spain, Macedonia, Egypt, Tunisia, and even Thapsus, wherever the heck that is, until Pompey was,
I think, Greece.
And until he was decisively beaten at the Battle of Pharsalus, and he tried to escape to Egypt, and they cut his head off and put it on a plate for Caesar. And then Caesar had them all killed, because this relationship is complex. He wanted to defeat Pompey, but he didn't want to kill him for one reason or another, because of this shared connection. But, you know, this 4-year-long war, this personal civil war, is one of the defining moments of the Western world. And I think that Pompey and Caesar are really, really compelling as archenemies.
That's an amazing one. Honestly, I wonder if my next pick borrows from that. I will say I tried to stick specifically to fiction picks with this. So literature, comic books, movies, TV shows. But I really do like this pick. And if anything, I tried to stick to it to make it easier. So I'm impressed that at this pick. But it's funny how there's some similarities, and I think that probably my next pick borrows from this historical story in a sense. And I'm also wondering if this pick is on your list, but I don't want to take away from this pick.
No, go ahead. Who did you pick? I'm curious now.
My pick is Sherlock Holmes and James Moriarty.
They got booted off my list.
Booted?
Yes.
I'm a huge Sherlock Holmes literature fan. I love the stories. And to me, it's a perfect build up and crafting of an arch nemesis. And I sort of wonder if it's borrowed a little bit from this Julius Caesar Pompey historical story, because the part that sticks out in my mind is, at least the way that I always interpreted it, Sherlock Holmes was like a man of the people, but he wasn't like good. Like, lots of people thought that he was bad and didn't like support him with good reason. He was a maniac. And I like, if you've watched the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes movies, do it a little bit of justice. I don't think that the Benedict Cumberfart ones do it much justice. Even though a lot of people like it, they sort of lean closer to the rudeness of autism. But like, really, Sherlock Holmes is a jerk. And in the stories, it comes through really strong, where he is just like, he just doesn't care about other people. And he only cares about solving these crimes and stuff. Moriarty is, if you look at a nutshell from the outside, is a perfect citizen, is literally the guy that you should root for. And it's really interesting when I read these books, because people don't think of that. They just think of the evil genius Moriarty, which is there. But Moriarty is like a professor and a scholar and very charitable, very well-spoken, clean dressed. Everybody looks up to him. And it's why Sherlock Holmes had a lot of trouble defeating him, because people didn't want to believe, because Sherlock Holmes is a bum. He smells, he stinks, he breaks into places, he destroys stuff. He's not nice to people. He's a drug addict. And he's the one claiming Moriarty is the bad guy. And it's a little bit like, you know, history names itself, but the Roman Empire versus Republic. Well, most everything wants to be a republic nowadays, right? And wants to lean on the Senate. And so Pompey is probably, in the grand scheme of things, the best good guy that lost. And it's sort of, now Moriarty is definitely a bad guy when you get down to it. But when you look at it, it's tough to actually root for Sherlock Holmes other than the fact that he's brilliant. Like, if you take Julius Caesar and look at his brilliance in warfare, it's easy to support him. But, you know, I think that the modern world has all agreed that a republic and a senate and the stuff that that stood for is more important than an empire and a dictatorship. And I just, the Moriarty Sherlock Holmes dynamic is so interesting to me, because everybody, it's very obvious to see Sherlock Holmes is very smart, and this is the first guy that's like smart enough to match wits with him. And that's a very straightforward look at it, and it's in itself very interesting. But what I always found interesting is, like, Moriarty is like the people's champ. Everybody thinks that he's the good guy in these stories. Like, only you as the reader, knowing Sherlock Holmes' background, understand that Sherlock Holmes is trying to take him down. But if you look at it through the civilians' eyes in these Cohen books, it's like Sherlock Holmes is a menace. Like, nobody on the Scotland Yard likes him. No police trust him. No people trust him. His own maid doesn't trust him, because he's a jerk to everybody. He smells bad. He's a drug addict. He's foul-mouthed. He destroys property all the time. And, like, you put that up next to what Moriarty is, a professor, well-spoken, does charity, is in the public, nice to people, a professional boxer. Like, it's just, it's a funny dynamic that I really do love out of these books.
So I didn't think I could really do this one justice. My research did pull up. So, like Batman and, well, not Julius Caesar and Pompey, but certainly like Batman and Magneto and Professor X, this is one that has transcended any single medium, and it's been found in video games and comics and anything you can think of. But Moriarty is barely presently featured in any of Arthur Conan Doyle's books. And I actually have no problem with it. I think that's really interesting. I think when you can craft a character through what a lot of what Sherlock Holmes is saying about him, that's a really deft touch of writing. That's a really impressive feat of writing. But I couldn't do the pick justice. And there are lots of, or not lots of, but I definitely had some other ones that were around it. And, you know, I'm mostly putting this one on here because of its acclamation. And I would put it a peg below Batman and Joker in our cultural conscious today. It's probably not if you go throughout the entirety of history, but today I would say Batman and Joker are a little higher, with a very similar relationship where, you know, Batman is the vigilante, not maybe Sherlock isn't quite the same type of vigilante, but he's often working a little outside of the law. He's got personal demons. You know, Batman likes tail. Sherlock Holmes likes opiates. And, I could see a lot of similarity there. And having not really read much Sherlock Holmes at all, I didn't feel comfortable trying to BS my way through it. So that's why I left him off.
Yeah, fair enough. To me, the thing about Sherlock Holmes and Moriarty, if you want to actually compare it to DC Comics, it would be much more like if Lex Luthor was Batman's arch nemesis. And that's what's interesting to me. Gotcha. Is that it does have that sense where people are like, is Batman a villain? Is Batman a good guy? Like people in the DC universe. That's sort of how they talk about Sherlock Holmes. Because there's no doubt about it. You read a couple of Sherlock Holmes stories, he's like blowing up buildings. He does whatever it takes to get to the bottom of this. Like he is living in a heroin den, an opiate den, and just like drugged out, and like the cops are like wanting to arrest him and stuff, but he's doing it for a purpose. But it's just so, to me, it hasn't been done as good since, where Moriarty is in the public's eye the perfect guy. I mean, it's like take all political spectrum out of it. It's legitimately like Obama is the bad guy. And I don't want to like open this podcast up to that sort of stuff, but like imagine a perfect political figure, either side of the spectrum to yourself. That's what Moriarty is in this story. He's doesn't have flaws in the public eye. And Sherlock Holmes, with his insanity in his picking apart this person, this character, finds these flaws. But the reason why, like, he doesn't reference heavily in it is because he's always overlying, and it's always this thing that Sherlock Holmes is doing secondarily, but it's his actual focus. And he can't bring him down because it's just like, nobody will believe him that this perfect guy, this absolutely perfect person, charitable, smart, athletic, kind, well-spoken, clean, all of these qualities that Britain at this time or Scotland at this time really loved and embodied. And Sherlock Holmes is the opposite. He's a scoundrel. Like, he's going to jail and doing these things. It's to me, it's such an interesting dynamic, because we as the reader know that Sherlock
the
Holmes
dramatic
is the good guy, but in the world he is not.
Yeah, no, that sounds really good. I have wanted to read more Sherlock Holmes for years, but there's a lot of stuff to read in general. Someday I'll get to it.
Probably the easiest place to start, ironically, is the one that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar wrote.
Oh, nice.
Base I have cash. I'll probably send it to you.
Please do.
Yeah, it's the easiest version of it, but he does a great job of mimicking the writing style.
My guy, Cadge. All right, moving on. I'm going to another multi-medium option here. And for this one, I'm going with Megatron and Optimus Prime. Megatron and Optimus Prime cannot occupy the same universe without fighting. Optimus Prime fights for the freedom of man and of Transformers and of other beings. Megatron wants to either destroy or, better if he can, control the world. It's simple. It is made for children, and it is amazing. Across movies, some of them horrible, all of them epic. Across comic books, cartoons, they just hate each other. It's because the thing that I love about this one the most is that it always goes beyond their battle of ideals and becomes personal. When I started the podcast off, the quote that I said was, "One shall stand, one shall fall." That's Optimus Prime in Transformers the movie talking to Megatron, who will then kill him. And of course, eventually Optimus comes back, because not only can these dudes not occupy the same room without killing each other, they can't even occupy death, because they keep coming back somehow and going to kill each other again. This is the funnest arch enemy, arch nemesis relationship on this list for me. And I love just the grandiosity of it. The universe spanning battles that these two have gone through throughout every medium you can possibly think of. Although I don't think Transformers belongs in novels. There probably has been some, but there's no reason to have Transformers novels. We need to see these guys.
There's definitely Transformers novels out there. There's
I'm
no
sure
doubt.
There are. It's just really dumb. Like, it's such a visual media type thing. But, and you know what makes this one to me even the better is that more than even Batman and the Joker, of course kids have had thousands of Batman toys, but Batman is usually, if a kid has a toy, they might be fighting against some dragon or something else. If you get Transformers toys, you have Optimus and you have Megatron and they are fighting. Or you have Optimal Primus and the Megatron T-Rex monster. They literally turn into freaking dinosaurs and a gorilla and fight each other. It's just, there's no better battle.
The funny thing to me is this one popped up on a bunch of lists and I gave it no time. I have very little interest in Optimus Prime versus Megatron.
Bro, I've been watching Transformers since Beast Wars in the 90s, and then there was Transformers Robots in Disguise in like 99 and 2000 or something, then Transformers Armada, then Energon, and it's just always been these two going at it, at each other's necks. Like, literally, they would destroy the universe to finally end it. It's kind of like Goku versus Vegeta, except for it always, like, they never team up. There's no Magneto and Professor X-ing it where they become friends or Magneto joins the X-Men. No, they are always going at each other's necks. Other Transformers, they can switch teams. Starscream can become a good guy. Hotshot might become a bad guy, whatever. Not with Megatron and Optimus Prime. They were, so again, the idea is that they have these ideals, that Megatron wants to control the world and Optimus Prime wants to bring freedom. That none of that matters. What matters is that they hate each other.
They do hate each other. This takes up a spot on my list. Very, very, very similar. Very similar mediums. I don't want to take away from your pick, but I don't have a lot to say about it, because I have another pick built on pure hate. I like this pick more and more because we don't even get the ideals explained to this pick. These are two beings, two creatures, two superpowers that hate each other just because each other exists. It's more than a dynamic of one wants to conquer and one wants freedom. This is just hate for hate's sake. This is the purest of the arch nemesis. Both sides hate each other, and it's Jerry Seinfeld and Newman.
This is great.
Jerry Seinfeld and Newman. We don't get a single moment of explanation of why they don't like each other. But there is no doubt when both occupy the screen, they have pure, unadulterated hate for each other. There is no motives involved. There is no storyline thread. There's just the fact that Newman will show up as the mail carrier giving him junk mail. I think almost in every episode, not quite in every episode, but he shows up and you get the "Hello, Jerry," and "Hello, Newman" tagline. And that's all you need. You talk about pure hatred. I fiddled around with Michael Scott and Toby from The Office for this. That's so one-sided, and it's brilliant. But I wanted pure both sides dislike each other. They share, I mean, think of this. They share a common friend, a thread, and they will not drop their hatred for each other for that common friend. Both of them are good friends with Kramer, but Newman and Jerry just hate each other. They hate each other more than Tom and Jerry. They hate each other more than Megatron and Optimus Prime. You talk about a pairing that will never team up. I couldn't imagine Jerry Seinfeld and Newman teaming up on any episode in any circumstance. And they come around every single day because Newman has to deliver this mail. And it's always funny. It's always perfect. And it's always pure viscera hate for each other. The moment that door opens and they see each other, you see it in their eyes. "Hello, Newman. Hello, Jerry." It's the perfect arch nemesis. To me, it runs deeper than any other thing that we have on this list. And it doesn't need explanation. You see it in their eyes every single time they see each other.
I like this one a lot. So what I love about this one is, so it's a good one. Like Seinfeld, the relationship is always hilarious. That's what makes it so great. But I believe in hatred. I believe in really good, meaty hatred that cannot be salvaged whatsoever. I hate things. There are things and people I absolutely hate. And this is, you know, this is a relationship like Batman and Joker. It's not really hatred. This is actual hatred, and it's pure and good.
If you talk about having a villain, having an actual arch nemesis, do it all the way. Yeah. I totally agree. These guys don't like each other. They won't pretend to like each other. I mean, maybe it's us as like two alpha males on this podcast that we won't. I could imagine having this relationship with a person that I don't like, but I have to see every day. I'm not going to pretend to like you, you know. And the funny thing is they don't do anything to each other. It's not like they fight each other. It's not like they torture each other. Like, you do have that scheming Newman where he is always scheming and he's always trying to pull one over on Jerry. But at the end of the day, they don't hurt each other. They don't fight. They don't try to kill each other. But there's always that Newman. I feel it, you know. This is so relatable because everybody has had that person where they just don't get along with them. And, you know, especially at work, you have that person that you're like, every time something messes up, it seems to point to them. I'm not going to call out any names, but I can totally, I know the situation where something messes up. I know this person is in charge of it. And, you know, it's not directly pointing to them, but I just know this person messed this up at work and I'm just Newman. You know what I mean?
Right. I will say you brought up The Office, and maybe of every piece of media that we've mentioned so far, the greatest hatred quote is definitely, if I had a gun with two bullets and if I was in a room with Hitler, Bin Laden, and Toby, I'd shoot Toby twice. That's the best quote.
Yeah.
Not related to this pick per se, but you brought it up. But yeah, I mean, again, good. This is honestly, I feel like this is like the hatred that you have for a sports team, where you don't want to see them in harm, but you hate them. You don't love them at all.
Well, it's, and this is the separating factor. I really, when you first pitched this, literally the first thing that I thought of was Michael and Toby. Toby does not hate Michael. And that's the separating factor. These guys don't like each other open. Like, they don't like each other, period. And as funny as Michael's one-sidedness is, if you look at it through a microscope, it's sort of like...
A what you know, scope?
Microscope.
Okay. Somebody will get it.
If it's so one-sided that, you know, the Parks and Recs ended up trying to do this with Jerry, and you end up feeling bad for the guy. You don't feel bad for either one of these dudes. They're just like, this is just two dogs in the dog park. They don't like each other. You know, when you pass, like, being a dog owner, I don't know if Cam's run into this yet, because Mojo's not quite as alpha as my Tommy dog. But I'll tell you, when I used to take the dogs to the park, there were a couple dogs that I knew that Tommy didn't get along with. And I would see them because it's the local dog park. And boy, you could feel it. They would see each other, and it's just like, it's on from the moment that they see each other. And this is that unbridled, I do not care what this dog is about. He's getting the hands on sight every time that I see him. And you, like I said, they don't fight, but you can sense it's that same sort of feel that it's like, I do not care what Newman's up to. He is my enemy.
I regret that we can't put Magic Johnson and Larry Bird in this list. Maybe you have them, but the fact that they became friends is really, really sad, because that one would have been good.
Nah, it's way... Larry Bird, Bill Laimbeer would be the pick that I would have made.
The whole NBA and Bill Laimbeer.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, see, that's the problem, is that maybe Alonzo Mourning versus Larry Johnson. Those dudes actually didn't like each other. Derek Fisher versus Matt Barnes, maybe too.
Oh, that's a good one. But I don't have a basketball one. My last one is video games. It's kind of purely video games, and it's, you know, there's two to me. There's multiple choices you could do, but two real major ones. I went with, and this is not the most interesting final pick I've ever done, but I went with Link and Ganondorf. I love the Link and Ganondorf one. I love how they kind of rounded out the entire story of what's going on here in Skyward Sword, and how it's just a cycle of reincarnation. A demon with endless power who hates Link and Zelda, reincarnating over and over to try to get power and finally take over and get all three pieces of the Triforce, because he wants this power. And Link, whether he's a little boy or an adult or a teen or whatever, having the courage and the guidance to stop him. It's simple, but it's the type of simplicity you need to create a video game that is actually more than simple. The story of the video game in The Legend of Zelda works so well because of the simplicity of the plot. But the plot is not the story. The story is the entire world, all these things that are happening, the things that are constantly corrupted because of Ganondorf, and the things that, as Link, you can bring back to a state of order, and often better than what was before. There are not, like, corrupt governments in Zelda for the most part, so you don't have to worry about, like, this, you know, the type of ways that we've looked at the story of Batman with a postmodern lens and saw, like, you know, more systemic issues than what Batman is doling out in justice. With the simplicity of this video game, we can play as Link and know that the things we're doing are good and for the good, because Ganondorf, when he is doing his bad stuff, is turning people into monstrosities and releasing monsters and zombies and skeletons into the world to kill people and mess stuff up. So the other choice, of course, is Mario and Bowser. I think there's room also for like a Kratos and Zeus. I think that's a really good one. But I went with Ganondorf and Link. I like this one the best. And if I had to say what puts it over the top of Mario and Bowser for me, it's that it stays in the same medium. There's not a really good Zelda movie or anything. The TV show was booty butt, but the way that they're able to reincarnate and come into completely different like formats and tell the same story in different forms, and then the way they rounded it out with Skyward Sword is really great, in my opinion.
Bowser and Mario is great. And actually, I watched that movie and it was way better than I thought it was going to be. But if anything, that movie sort of took away from the mystique of Bowser and Mario's. It was just Mario had... I mean, I don't know how canon it is in your head, but Mario in that movie was so uninterested in the beef between him and Bowser that it just took away from it. That actual beef to me, which shout outs to Jack Black. I mean, we're going to have to do a Jack Black list for himself because this dude kills every single role he's in, by the way.
I have it in my Goatmore. I have a Goatmore ideas page set up, and one of them is Goat Jack Black roles. He's so good. I love Nacho Libre to the ends of the earth.
So good. Yeah, I mean, I like this one. I'm not hugely deep into the lore of
which is crazy to me, Zelda. Because the lore goes super deep.
I know.
I can't believe you're not in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's to be honest, I was just sort of late to it. I was so enamored by Pokemon growing up that I didn't really do Zelda games until I was older. But yeah, it's a great one. I mean, Ganondorf is that dude for most of it.
I mean, sometimes he's not even Ganondorf. He's Ganon, a giant pig monster. He literally, like, it's about the evil. It's not about the plot. It's about the story. It's about the story of this evil, power-hungry beast in whatever form he may come, with whatever reason he may have. Oh, we didn't have the reins in Gerudo. Whatever form he comes, being beat by this little boy who sees his tyranny and is able to defeat it using courage and the wisdom he's gained from Zelda. It's, and some would call it the Legend of Zelda.
Some would. Many would. Yeah, no, I like the pick. I can't really make that pick only because I don't know enough of it. But the way you explain it, I like it a lot. To me, it's the obvious video game pick. I'm sort of racking my brain for a better video game pick, but I don't actually think there's one, especially if you don't want to do Mario and Bowser, which, like I said, Jack Black's great, but Mario cared so little of Bowser in that that I didn't really think of it. My last pick, I honestly had to do another comic book one because this one is too good. A hero going up against an absolute dominating monster of a force. It's very much like what you're saying. A hero that has physical limitations versus this monster that he goes up against. And it's unfair. It's sad. And it's very easy to root for the hero. Yes, I am talking about Lex Luthor up against Superman. The hero Lex Luthor, the absolute best that humanity has to offer, against a cheat code, an alien that has everything handed to him on a plate, all the superpowers in the world, more superpowers than you can write down. Nobody sitting and questioning Superman. Everybody just trusts this alien with all the powers of a god intrinsically, except for Lex Luthor, who has worked his whole life to be smarter than everybody, stronger than everybody. He has worked for his perfection as a human specimen. He is everything that we should look up to and try to achieve. He works for his physique. He works just as hard as Batman to be at his physical prime. He's smart. He's savvy. He's business forward, well-dressed, charitable. And this alien comes with undefeatable powers, and nobody will take it as a serious threat other than Lex Luthor. It's David and Goliath. It's everything that we root for. And, you know, at the end of the day, Superman wins out, but the good guys don't always win. And that's what's really important about these types of comic books and stories.
I love this one. I just think, like, I think I mentioned this at the beginning, this is my favorite. I specifically chose to have one comic book one, and, like, I left out Magneto and Professor X, but this is by far my favorite because Lex Luthor, when written well, he's not always written this way. That's the one thing I'd go, like,
right.
The Superman movies, the original ones, he is not written like this. He is hacky, and he is not, you know, in physically great shape or anything like that. He's not written like this, which doesn't make any sense to me. But in Batman v Superman, in the Snyderverse, he had this opportunity to make a really, really interesting tech like this. He had the guy that had played Mark Zuckerberg, and he could have made a Mark Zuckerberg mixed with some strong dude, and instead he went with...
Hold on. Take a second. Mark Zuckerberg just won gold and silver in a jiu-jitsu tournament. So
well, he could have had...
He's a physical specimen.
He could have had Mark Zuckerberg then. He could have had, like, a pretty interesting villain for our time than whatever he went with. However you feel about that movie, I thought that was a strange choice personally. But when he's written well, like in the Justice League animated series, or you read this a decade ago and didn't like it, but I really loved his portrayal in Superman Red Son. I think that's one of the books that really gets at this idea.
Do love Lex Luthor in that. Yeah, I do.
That was the best part of it to me. But like this idea, he's perfect. He's perfected what it means. He's the Ubermensch. And he could, if he wasn't so jealous of Superman, he could cure cancer. He could solve the climate crisis. He could do all these things. Part of why he doesn't do it isn't just because he's obsessed with Superman. It's because Superman could fix it himself. He could, if climate change is a thing, Superman is so powerful, he could just change the climate. And so Superman, by his existence, is taking away the ambition that we humans have. And Lex Luthor realizes that destroying Superman is the only way to stop this and to stop humans from ascending to a higher level of being. So I love this one. I do think that, like, not to the same extent as, like, Michael Scott and Toby, like, he is Superman's nemesis, but Superman doesn't seem to hate him. He doesn't have the same level of vitriol for Lex Luthor, even as, like, Batman does for the Joker.
Yeah, but Superman is a virus. He doesn't care about humanity. He doesn't see humanity. He doesn't care enough to hate Lex Luthor. He is a virus holding down humanity. This is Joe Rogan versus artificial intelligence right here.
Is this a thing? I don't know about this. Is Joe Rogan supposed to fight ChatGPT? This is what you said like a couple episodes ago.
I actually think it was a Matthew joke a couple episodes ago. No, I mean, Joe Rogan's really, really worried about artificial intelligence. And I mean, the parallels between Joe Rogan and Lex Luthor, pretty spot on. They're both bald, super in shape.
Oh,
smart
yeah.
Guys.
I guess Lex Luthor has that roid gut too.
Yeah. So it's
Is Lex Luthor one of the partners on Onnit?
Probably.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I'd go so far to say Lex Luthor in the DC universe has probably opened his own comedy website like Joe Rogan has as well. But yeah, I mean, I love it. I don't like Superman. He is by a lot my least favorite comic book character. He's boring to me. He is just too good to be true.
So you're not going to see Superman Legacy, the James Gunn movie? I'm really interested in that.
I haven't seen a Superman movie yet, but
you've never seen a single one, not the original?
No.
Fair enough.
No. Yeah, I mean, I'm not that interested. I don't. Superman by a lot was the worst part of the Justice League movie by a lot. And
maybe, but
I was going to say, I even love Henry Cavill and I loved him as Superman, but yeah, I'm just not interested.
Superman really, 1 and no, 2 are the first good superhero movies. They're actually good. 3 but, and 4 are travesties.
But you had mentioned this. There's not a great Lex Luthor interpretation in the movies, I don't think. I think that their Smallville is actually pretty close to what it should be. Like, if you think back to Smallville, the whole point is this guy is like the pinnacle of humanity going up against a god. And, you know, it's a really interesting thing of like this idea of breaking the slavery of we have this thing to take care of us, but we don't further humanity if this thing takes care of us all the time. Honestly, it's a pretty spot on idea of what a lot of people are concerned about, artificial intelligence. That's the reason I made the Joe Rogan reference. But yeah, it's just a really interesting thing of, I think the most interesting thing about Superman that's not really explored is the fact that he could be taking away from humanity protecting it so much. And Lex Luthor sort of wants humanity to start taking care of itself to forward itself. And it's a really interesting dynamic. And it's the only like really one-sided one that I considered either than Michael and Toby, but that was considered only because of how funny Michael is. But yeah, I love the dynamic. I love it from Lex Luthor's side. And I don't actually think, well, it's obviously not explored enough as supervillain. Even these movies that take a Superman trope and make them totally evil, I forget James Gunn has another, I don't remember the movie with the kid version of Superman that's a horror movie. James Gunn did that one.
I don't know.
It's like Cape or something.
Super? I don't know. I have no clue.
Yeah. No, it's pretty interesting. Yeah, it is Super. But yeah, I mean, I don't even care about looking at Superman in the same sense as the movie Super, or as like the way the boys look at whatever that superhero is.
Homelander.
Yeah. I don't care about a pure evil Superman. I actually think it's more interesting that Superman is thinking he's doing good, but actually holding humanity back, and Lex Luthor wanting to crack that. That's a really interesting concept to me, but yeah, that's my final pick. I did two comic book ones, but it was too good for me to not throw in there.
Yeah, I got no problem with you doing two. I almost did two. if we're being honest. I almost had the Joker and Magneto slash Professor X on here. But that's it. That's your last pick. That was my last pick. My list today, I went with Julius Caesar versus Pompey the Great, Batman versus the Joker, Megatron versus Optimus Prime, and Link versus Ganondorf. I love my honorable mentions this time. So I have Professor X versus Magneto, of course, and Superman versus Lex Luthor. But I also have Sub-Zero versus Scorpion. That's the third huge video game one. Mario versus Bowser, Sherlock Holmes versus Moriarty, the Doctor versus the Master. Here's another superhero one. Doctor Doom versus Reed Richards, yeah. or the whole Fantastic Four, really. And finally, Light Yagami versus L, Death Note.
Ooh, that's a really good one. I didn't think of that one. That's a really good one. Yeah. The picks that I had, Batman versus Joker, I had Lex Luthor versus Superman, Sherlock Holmes versus Professor Moriarty, and Jerry Seinfeld versus Newman. Cam said a bunch of my honorable mentions. Dr. Doom versus Reed Richards. I wanted to talk about that one, but three comic books was going to be way too much. Michael versus Toby. Cam mentioned them, but I also wanted to do Coca-Cola versus Pepsi.
Ooh.
But I did not want to open. That opened up the door to a way too complicated list. Because then you also have Chick-fil-A versus Popeyes and the Lakers versus Celtics. I thought that opened the door too much, but Coca-Cola versus Pepsi was the tops of my list if we wanted to go into brands.
One that just missed my honorable mention was Napoleon versus Horatio Nelson or Napoleon versus Europe. And I just couldn't really squeeze either of them on there. So they didn't even, well, I'll mention them now.
I thought about Napoleon versus Europe. I did not want to go the route of Germany versus the world. So I tried to stop that slippery slope. But thanks to all the Bills, Phils, Nannies, and Does out there for tuning into us one more time. We love putting on this podcast and we love discussing this stuff. But there are many arch nemesises out there, and we certainly did not mention your favorites at some point. So if you want to tell me why Reverse Flash is the best nemesis for Flash, please reach out to us on Facebook, on Instagram, on our website. We love to hear from you guys. And until next time,
stay great and bleed on.